We're at a point in time where we have not seen such a crisis at this scale in terms of the number of people who are at risk of starving or dying from diseases related to starvation. At the moment, we have 220 million people who don't know where their next meal is coming from. 45 million people, that's the size of cities inclusive of Paris, Madrid, London, Rome, and Berlin, that number of people actually are at risk of starving to death. And within that, 1 million people today could potentially die because they can't find food.
So beyond this unprecedented scale, what more can we say about specific impacts on parts of the population, such as women and girls?
The most significant group affected by this are women and children. 80% of those who are at risk of starving are women and children. And the impact is not just the immediate risks of life and death, but it's also the fact that a generation of children will never recover. Even if tomorrow we can feed them, the condition of having been malnourished means that you've probably lost education. Many girls are currently being married off at a very young age. Certainly, girls in school has dropped significantly compared to the gains we were making 10 years ago. So it's a real social phenomenon that we're going through at the moment.
Clearly a very complex crisis. Where should prevention efforts be focused first?
So whilst we need to be focused on saving lives today, in parallel, you're absolutely right, we've got to be looking at prevention. And prevention comes on a number of fronts. The first is conflict. 80% of these places are in conflict. So we need to double down on political will. And where we can't, we need to be doing mitigation. So the Black Sea Grain Initiative is one example of that, or cross-border into Syria, where we couldn't find a peace settlement, we found a solution. That's the first thing. The second is around climate adaptation, and we can really prevent what is an escalating problem. We have a climate crisis now in the Horn of Africa, for example, and that's where we need to be doubling down on adaptation. And the third is around issues that the Secretary General himself has identified. Significant reform of the debt situation, debt restructuring, trade liberalisation. So the economic piece is another prevention strategy.
And now to talk more about the coordination aspect and the whole system. So how do you see your role here? Are there parts of the system that are not being tapped yet for solutions? And how can we shift the way that we work to be more effective?
Yes, it's going to take a Herculean effort of all of us coming together. The humanitarian system right now is operating, 80% of the money actually goes to food crisis countries. So the humanitarian system is in the right place at the right time. What we need is some of the other actors to come with us into these fragile countries, contexts, communities, and start working on exactly the resilience piece. The IFIs need to be faster and working in these places. Climate money needs to be coming in. It's a climate crisis now, it's not tomorrow. People are actually dying today because of it. So that financing, only 0.3% of it actually goes to the countries that are facing the climate crisis today. So we need that part of the system coming in. And then there's the development money. Only 11% of development money in 2020 went to the right sectors and the right countries to prevent this. We need more of that. A small shift in percentage of what exists will make a massive impact. So that's what we need today.
To get back to your recent experiences, you traveled to Somalia recently. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about this visit and what you saw there concretely?
So Somalia is the epicenter right now of a conversion of all of these factors that have resulted in such a large population. More people in Somalia are potentially going to die because of this current crisis than they did in the famine of 2011. And that's because it's a prolonged one. And that is alarming. I recently visited communities in Galkayo in the north. I visited communities around Mogadishu and Baidoa. I actually visited a hospital where families who basically were able to get to the hospital with their children, so many others have not been able to get to that hospital, and talked to about 12 families there about their travel and their frustration. The children were there because they were malnourished, severely malnourished. And out of the 12, by the end of the evening, five of those children had died. So it's alarming, the situation. And just to say, it's one image that really strikes me about this, because it's the human face of these numbers, these massive numbers we talk about. When you walk into a ward like that in a hospital where children are so severely malnourished that they are starving, you don't hear a sound. And so the fact that children and parents aren't crying, it's alarming. They don't have the ability to cry anymore. Their body is reserving all of its energy just to breathe. It's quite a stark thing, and that is the image of starvation today in many of these countries.
No, it's definitely a very, very shocking experience, and it might feel overwhelming.
It does seem overwhelming. It does seem the challenges are so immense, and we have so many mega crises at the moment. But we have, in our lifetime, we have actually stopped famine. Around the time when I was born, which wasn't that long ago, we had malnutrition, for example, was at 49, close to 50%. In 2019, we got it down to 8% of the world's population. It's starting to creep up, but we have been able to pull that back. That is a massive human achievement. So the priorities are very much around making sure that the world pays attention. We get the money fast and quickly so we can save lives today, but also mobilizing the system to work so that people can have a life tomorrow.